following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
And it's Friday Eve, everybody. Yeah, that's how we refer to Thursday around here. It makes us feel a little better about it. Welcome to a Thursday. I am Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com on the Progressive Voices Network, on a number of other internet stations, plus streaming video on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. So hopefully you'll be able to find us one way or another. The first thing I got to do is say how much I appreciate all your feedback from yesterday. I'm so glad you guys enjoyed the show with Bill Mumy. Bill Mumy and Angela Cartwright. And again, it's weird when I have on an old friend, it's a different kind of thing. It's easier for me to interview somebody I don't know and have never met. But Bill Mumy is an old, old dear friend of mine. And so interviewing him is weird. But the feedback, you guys, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. We needed a break from the insanity. And what better way to celebrate the 56th anniversary of the debut of Lost in Space than with Will and Peggy and Penny Robinson, right? So I'm glad you enjoyed it. Every now and then we need to take a break from the politics, from the ugliness. Today is not one of those days, though. Today, there's stuff we need to talk about. And you know what? Rather than me go into detail on what has me all pissed off right now, I'm going to bring in an old friend of the show, an old friend of mine. Alex Lawson is the executive director of Social Security Works. You find him on the Twitter machine at ALaw202. Hey, Alex, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Well, the thing that prompted me to reach out to you was a tweet that you sent out after the, you know,
dangerous.
Oh my goodness. You know, I love Twitter. I hate it, but I love it. But you said, and sometimes I go over the top and say things, and this time I don't think you went over the top. I think what you said was what needed to be said about these three conservadems, as I referred to them. Howie Klein, who will be on at the bottom of the hour, calls this faction of the Democratic Party the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. For some reason, the media tends to refer to them as moderates or centrists. I'm sorry, they are neither. They are neither. Neither, however you prefer to pronounce it. They are obstructionists. And what these three did, the three I'm going to point out right now, are Representatives Scott Peters of California, Kurt Schroeder of Oregon, and Kathleen Rice of New York. And what they did was effectively, in committee, kill the provision in, oh, you know what? We don't have audio on this shot. Hold on, because people are not hearing us. And I'm guessing they're going, Nicole, audio, audio. Shit. You know, this is what happens when I'm my own producer. It's coming. I got you, YouTube. It'll be there in a second. So what, I hate when I do that, you know. Anyway, I know you got
the joys of live
audio
production.
I know. And being my own producer too. And when I try to do too much at once, now you have audio. It's coming. they're all telling me in the YouTube chat room, no audio, Nicole, no audio. There you go. Okay, they got it. All right, so Alex Lawson is here, YouTubers. Alex Lawson, I'm going to start over, Executive Director of Social Security Works. And the reason I invited him today is because of a tweet he sent out regarding these three conservadems who basically in committee yesterday killed the provision in the big Build Back Better legislation that would allow Medicare to negotiate prices with the big pharmaceuticals on our prescription drugs. Why would they do a thing like that, Alex Lawson?
It's simple. It's pharma cash, big bags of pharma cash. The only thing I will say is they are trying to kill the provision. They blasted it out of their committee, and this is super in the weeds, and DC is like complicated on purpose so that it's hard to follow.
Uh-huh.
But it actually passed out of another committee, Ways and Means, the other big money committee. yesterday as well. So we have the bill, the part of the bill that is the Medicare negotiations piece. What they did, though, is this is all one big negotiation. They didn't kill it, but they definitely punched us right in the face, really visibly. It was super well executed. I moved to DC to get my master's to take on pharma.
Uh-huh.
I have been fighting them for a long time. I think that people who haven't sort of get shocked at how good and evil they are. But if you fought them for a while, you're like, oh, man, this is perfect. Perfectly executed. You know, Rice met with people. She never said she had a problem, right? This was right? all concocted. And then we knew Schrader was a problem. We knew Peters is a problem, but they needed a third. And little did we know that pharma had dropped big bags of cash on Kathleen Rice to try to bottle it up in committee. I mean, this has nothing to do with the will of her constituents or, you know, a lot of like Scott Peters. This is just pharma cash for him, too. But he pretends that it's about like, oh, well, there's industry in San Diego that
oh,
it's important.
Come on.
That's all a lie. But at least he can pretend that. Kathleen Rice can't pretend anything, nothing. She is just a pharma tool to throw this punch.
Well, the tweet,
it's really despicable.
The tweet that you sent out that caught my eye was to Kathleen Rice. You wrote, at Kathleen Rice, you just stood with pharma to keep our drug prices the highest in the world. How much did pharma pay you to ignore the will of your constituents and the American people? Absolute villainy. I'm guessing she didn't reply to you.
She did not reply.
No. I want to show another tweet that you but retweeted.
Nicole, I want to ask your opinion on something too, though, because I was trying to figure out, would it be absolute villainy or absolute villainry for what she did? And I was like, you could see it either way.
Villainy or villainry?
Yeah, you could see it either way. She is a villain who also did this really despicable thing. So I went with villainy. So
I like villainy. I don't know where the R comes from. I don't get
I just want to make sure we say Kathleen Rice and villain near each other as much as possible.
Right.
That's what I wanted to accomplish.
To make things worse, Kathleen Rice sort of came out of nowhere. I was going to say left field, but more like right field, and was awarded a spot on, the Energy and Commerce Committee that should have gone to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And for some reason, Nancy Pelosi put Kathleen Rice on the committee. You retweeted, this was someone else's meme, but it was a photo. I love this. I'm going to put it up on the screen here. It's AOC in her gown from the Met Gala the other day, but instead of tax the rich on the back, it has another message. It says, it was a huge mistake to deny AOC the seat on energy and commerce, and it was obvious Kathleen Rice would use the position to undermine the Democratic agenda. That's really good. You know, creative use of you know, commonly something that we've seen a lot. True.
I felt that one a lot too, Nicole. I'm pretty sure you know we for two cycles have been really involved in trying to do advocacy to get the right people on the committees, specifically because we end up in this situation so often. And like it's really difficult because it's a black box steering committee, which is basically just leadership. Nancy Pelosi can just really just divvy it up however she wants. And so it's this huge, complex playing board. And I've never been the recipient of more anger from, you know, politician world than when I try to organize at the committee level to like try to make that something that the public has input into, because they really feel it's theirs, right? Like this is their thing, the public. And I'm like, this is where they make the bones, though. They kill our stuff in committee.
That's right.
Obviously,
that's where it happens.
We need input into who's on there. If AOC was on ENC for all of the letters, yesterday wouldn't have happened. Nancy Pelosi who tanked her own number one priority by deciding to like punch progressives in the face and say you can't have one of the money committees. We actually tried to get Ways and Means for AOC when she was a freshman. And that spot went to Tom Suozzi on Ways and Means. And so this was the second time around. There was no reason she couldn't have it. And Suozzi, when he got Ways and Means, he was a sophomore. Anyways, it was just a power play by leadership. And
it blew up in Nancy's face. I mean, I tweeted out that story with a simple message. Nice work, Nancy.
Yeah,
I should have put the sarcasm tag.
Yeah. Hoisted on their own petard, for sure. it was classic. And it's kind of the thing that you really do have to inure yourself to in DC, because you're going to get hit in the face so often. And you're like, oh, who could have foreseen? And you're like, all of us.
Everybody.
All of us foresaw
Hello.
It.
Right.
We and all knew.
It's amazing. And Alex, there's another tweet that you retweeted from, in this case, the New York Working Families Party. And they had two screenshots of tweets from Kathleen Rice. The first one is, and it doesn't have the date on it, unfortunately, but obviously it was, I guess, during her campaign, I'm guessing, she wrote, "In Congress, I've always put the health and safety of Long Island first, whether it meant securing billions of dollars in aid for New York during the pandemic, taking on drug and insurance companies to lower the cost of health care, or protecting a woman's right to choose, #NY04. And then the second screenshot they have up here is, it's actually not a tweet from her. It's a news item that says, "A trio of key Democrats announced Tuesday they will oppose the party's plan to lower drug prices, creating a significant roadblock for Democrats' desired $3.5 trillion tax and spending package. Representative Scott Peters, California, Kathleen Rice, New York, and Kurt Schrader of Oregon said they will oppose drug pricing changes that would allow Medicare to negotiate lower prices and that have become the framework to pay for many of the Democrats' sought-after measures this year." And Working Families Party tweeted it with the message, "How it started, how it's going."
Yep.
Can you say, I'm a
bullshit?
She's a liar. She's a bullshitter. She's no better than the people on the other side who lie with every time they take a breath.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, I have to fight a lot of cynicism. I know you do as well. And you're like, no, our voices can be so powerful when we stand. And people are like, DC sucks. I don't want to have anything to do with it. And what they mean by that is this. This is exactly what people hate about DC. Look at her campaign ads. I'm on your side.
Right.
I'm going to take on pharma to lower your drug prices. They get in office. They're like, what's that? A big bag of money? Fuck you, citizens. I'm with pharma.
Right.
It's just done. And everyone is like, I don't want to get my hopes up when I know that level of evil and corruption is actually so prevalent in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I get it. I get it. This stuff is disgusting. But my counterpoint to that is, exactly because of that is why we need, you know, we have to be able to roll with the punches and also recognize it's a fist fight. Pharma fights dirty.
No kidding.
And we're going to get punched in the face. And we got to get back up and keep going. And, you know, there's a lot of amazing stuff in this package. And I do not think that people want to let the whole thing fail. I think that we will be able to find a way. I think that the fact that Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, and Chuck Schumer have all made lowering prescription drug prices a central part of their selling the Build Back Better plan to the people. It's just common sense that they've got to lean into this now. There's a wobble here, guys. We need Joe Biden making those phone calls. Nancy Pelosi has a lot of power over right. members of the House. She can take away committee assignments. I think she could just move their offices, right? Like you
yes.
could do something petty. That's what the Republicans do. They'll just like take all the furniture out of someone's office when they mess up, right? Like they know
right.
how to be petty.
Yes, they do.
To demonstrate power. And we need all of the establishment Democrats. So this is this case, Nicole, we're often railing against the establishment to do good things. Right now, the establishment says they want to do good things. And so we can't let them be like, we tried, but it was hard.
Right.
We're like, yeah, we know it's hard.
You know, the other thing that's infuriating is this Kathleen Rice. I said she came out of right field. She is working her way through leadership, too. She like emerged out of nowhere to take on a role in leadership. I think she's given up that right with this vote, don't you?
Yeah, and Scott Peters is involved in the DCCC, right? Like they can take away all the DCCC, which is the political arm that helps elect
Congress,
Democrats,
right?
And keeps elected Democrats elected. It protects them. You can take away all of that, and they should. This is not like this is a progressive priority, but it's not a progressive priority right in the middle of the Democratic Party's plan is lowering prescription drug prices and expanding Medicare, making ACA subsidies longer,
yep.
Closing the Medicaid gap, adding vision, hearing, dental. All of those are tied together. So we can't just let, you know, some pharma bros try to take this down.
No. In fact, you brought up bros. I'm going to bring up the original bro, our pal Bernie Sanders. This is his program. He's the chair of the Senate Budget Committee. And this is, you know, Joe Biden, knocking on wood laminate here, is going along with Bernie. This is Bernie's agenda here. And Bernie was on this week on Sunday with George Stephanopoulos. And here's what he had to say about the chance that either one of these bills gets tanked, because we know what's happening with Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, who, by the way, both were summoned to the White House today. Kyrsten Sinema was there for less than an hour this morning, and I guess Joe Manchin's there this afternoon. I don't know if they're making any progress, but, you know, I want to put them in a room with Bernie, because I have a feeling he'd have a few things to say to Kyrsten Sinema. Right, Bernie? Tell us.
We could do the reconciliation bill, create millions of good jobs, and finally tell the American people that we are going to stand up for working families, not just the rich and the powerful.
I guess the question I have is how. There's no margin for error in the Senate. If you vote against it, it doesn't pass. If Senator Manchin votes against it, it doesn't pass. I mean, so you're likely, if you both stick to your positions, you're going to end up with nothing.
That is a possibility. And I think that would be a disaster for the American people. But you got the president of the United States. You got leadership in the House and the Senate. You got the old, this is not Joe Manchin versus Bernie Sanders. I would surmise that over 90% of Democrats, over 40 Democrats in the Senate, would prefer to spend what I propose, $6 trillion.
Yes.
Because they understand the needs facing working families and climate are so great. So a major compromise has already been made. And there is a real danger that this bill will lose, that the infrastructure bill will lose in the House, because you got many people there, and I support them, who are saying, you know what, we had a joint agreement. We're going to go forward together, deal physical infrastructure, deal with the needs of working families. Let's do it. Let's create the jobs. Let's deal with an expansion of Medicare. Let's deal with climate. That's what we've got to do.
You go, Bernie. So, I guess we're on the edge of our seats now, Alex Lawson, because anything can happen. Because people like these three or others could tank it in the House. And then you got Manchin and Sinema doing whatever it is they do that could tank it overall. What's your prognostication? What do you think is going to happen?
So $3.5 trillion is a ton of money.
Over 10 years, by the way, which they don't say often enough.
They don't say often enough. And the Pentagon gets $750 billion, gets $700 billion every single year.
Right.
So that's, a lot more money.
A hell of a lot more money.
But I will stress that it's a ton of money.
Yep.
We can do so, and we have more than enough money to pay for it. The idea that we're coming at this from scarcity is just bananas, but it's not bananas. It's just a con. It's part of the racket, right? They always have money for their stuff.
Always.
If you're rich, you get money. If it's war, you get money. Everyone else can just die. That's the racket. So this is real, and even the assholes get something in something this big.
Yes,
right?
They do.
So
yes, they do.
how do you get this person who's terrible to vote for this thing that's good? And you're like, probably can't, but you can get this person who's terrible to vote for this thing that they want and put that in a package with the good things. And if it's big enough, you can cover the whole caucus. So is, you know, a Bob Menendez, who's Mr. Pharma, and actually I think this kerfuffle in ENC was all just aimed at strengthening his negotiating hand in finance. He's Pharma's guy.
Wow.
Is he going to vote for the drug price provisions in the whole plan? No, he's going to vote for something else. He's going to do all he can to water it down, to kill it in committee. But whatever we're able to get to the floor, I think that the just magnitude of what we're talking about is going to actually move politicians to do what they want to do.
So the challenge is getting all of these provisions through committee, getting each individual part through committee. Once it gets through committee, you think we're okay.
And keeping it together. So we can't let the bib, the bipartisan part, that's right. What Bernie was talking about. We have to keep it all together. If they can split it in any way, then everything else loses. So everything together. And then there's a real possibility that here's what politicians love, even the terrible ones, but even the good ones like this, because this probably is the best part of their job. They like going to things that they helped do in their district and their state, standing in front of it while people take pictures and be like, you see that? That road, that was me.
Right.
Or whatever. And good. Do that if you voted for it.
Take credit for it. That's fine, even though it had nothing to do with you. And to the Republicans, they vote against it and they still take credit for it.
And Democrats should take that practice on. Like, we should fly to every time they try to do those and just stand and ruin their photo shots.
Yes.
Like, the president should do that. Whenever they do something, Biden should fly into their district and be like, this dude voted against
that. That's right.
That is what the force, Nicole, that I think is going to get. It's that plus all of the pressure and rewards that both Pelosi and Schumer can, entice the votes. They're both really good operators. The cards are sort of laid up for this. The margin for error is nothing. It's nothing. It's zero
nothing.
On the
There's
Senate.
There's no, nothing.
Three
right.
on the House is the same as zero in the Senate.
That's like, right.
So it's all about everything together. And then the president, Schumer, Pelosi, Bernie Sanders, as you said, they all have to push together and get it done.
And have to as well. But Alex Lawson, there's another fly in the ointment, as it were. Something that we didn't hear uttered in the last 4 years when Trump was in office, because Democrats went along with them and suspended the debt ceiling and said, oh, you have a free rein. And Donald Trump increased the debt that they're all so crazy about by 36% in less than 4 years. And he had free rein to do it because the Democrats just gave in on the debt ceiling. Well, now the debt ceiling is coming up again. If we don't fix that, if they don't raise the debt ceiling by the end of the month, we're going to default. Mitch McConnell saying, you're on your own. Sorry, we're not helping you. You helped us, but we're not going to help you, right? So
yeah, the amazing thing there, as you know, is that they could also just get rid of the debt ceiling.
Yes.
The debt ceiling is a nonsense thing.
It's ridiculous. It's saying
it's not
we
when they
will
spend
pay
the money.
No, it's saying we'll pay the bills for the spending we already approved.
Exactly. It's a super dumb process in a whole field of dumb processes. But yeah, there's so government funding and the debt ceiling. There is a lot of brinkmanship, and I read the plans. So here's this big thing that happens in DC is everyone's like, well, there must be a plan. There is very often not a plan.
Everyone
should really know that. If someone can't tell you what the plan is, there is no plan. Everything I've read is just that some statement that's like the Republicans would be crazy to tank the right and the period. And you're like, that's not a plan.
They are crazy. So what else?
What have you been watching?
What else you got? Oh, my goodness. Hey, Alex, before I let you go, I got to ask, are you painting?
I see the easel
behind you and the beautiful painting on the wall.
I'm not painting. I wish. This is a band's poster. And then this is a painting at the house that I'm staying at. And so I like it for the shot. But yeah, I think it's a little bit of trickery to make it look like I'm painting.
Well, because there's an easel. And, you know, during the pandemic, I took up painting.
I didn't know that.
I had not picked up a paintbrush literally since I was probably 12 years old. But I was bored and I was home. I'm still home because I'm old and cancer survivor. And I don't go out. COVID, hello. So I started painting in October, and it just took off. Somebody asked me, can you paint my cat? I was like, I'll try.
Oh, I love that.
So I'm doing pet portraits now, and now I'm playing around with the faux stained glass. But I thought I had a kindred spirit there. I thought you were
no,
a partner.
I'm an appreciator. During the pandemic, I signed up for some art courses from the Barnes Collection in Philly. So you keep painting, I'll keep learning the fundamentals of art, and then we can
collaborate.
You could hold up your paintings and I could say words about them.
Cool. Alex, I'll tweet at you some of my masterpieces. So
I love
it. You can see what I'm up to. Alex Lawson, socialsecurityworks.org. You've been there for as long as I've known you, which is well over a decade now. Doing great work, trying to hold their feet to the fire to help the people. One last question for you. There's a new, you know, story they're trying to push, which is, see, we told you Medicare and Social Security are insolvent. They're not going to last more than 4 more years. What do you say to that?
It's just, again, the whole idea is to drive down confidence in these programs that are rock solid. These are the foundations that you can build on. You know, Social Security never missed a payment through boom time and bust, war and peace. Looking around at everything else and saying, this is the thing that you're going to say is uncertain.
Right.
I'm like, this thing is certain, man. This works. Look around at the other stuff. That seems way more uncertain, but it's a con. It's a racket. It's another thing where Wall Street sees a bucket of money and they just can't keep their greedy little hands off of it. Luckily, with truth tellers like you, we're able to expose their shenanigans and hit back their hands, but they never stop. They never will. We'll just have to keep beating them.
And it's a constant batting away of the lies, of the nonsense they throw out there to make you believe things that are just inherently not true.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
It's amazing. And one last thing. Sorry, I know I said before. We Act Radio. How are things going there? Alex is a co-owner, right?
Mm-hmm. It's great. You got to, when we are traveling again, we have our backyard. We're doing a lot of shows and community events out there, our community garden. Just a lot of great stuff at We Act Radio. We still obviously need to get all the progressive truth teller voices and get into a space that's as big as Fox News,
right?
Since we continue to see they're just trying to make the world burn faster. Just
aren't they?
Lies and propaganda directly into the brains of tens of millions of people. And we're doing our part, but we need to be bigger.
Without a doubt. But I give you so much credit because you and partners bought up this Signal in a section of D.C. What's the name of the town?
Anacostia.
Anacostia, which it's not Capitol Hill by any means, but it's an area that is up and coming that needs some energy pushed into there. And so you set up a studio there. You do the terrestrial radio thing. And it's not, you know, really the time for terrestrial radio, but you've been making it work for a long time.
Yeah. And we branched out more into production of all sorts, video, live streaming, radio, podcasting. The key is just producing content and giving a voice to those traditionally excluded by the media. And you know, there's a great joy that I get in that. And it is the only way that we'll win in our advocacy. If we can't get our stories out, we can't win. Controlling the information and controlling the story is the whole game that Wall Street and the other side play.
You are so correct. You're correct a lot of the time. Alex Lawson, again, find him on the Twitters at A-Law 202 for Alex Lawson, 202 area code, and socialsecurityworks.org and weactradio.com. Alex, thank you so much. It's been too long, and I appreciate you jumping on with us today.
Yeah, let's do it again.
I hope so. All right. Stick around, everybody, because up next, I hope somebody is mixing up a batch of Dirty Debbies because Howie Klein joins us in just a moment. Thanks, Alex. Bye-bye. All right. Howie, are you there?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, oh, hello, Howie Klein.
Nicole Sandler, hello.
Hello. Oh, you even sound tired. So this morning, just so people know, I email you, you know, on Thursday mornings to say, is there anything in particular you want to talk about today? Obviously, there's all kinds of news, but sometimes there's a specific thing you want to hit on. I want to make sure I get to it. And you wrote back, you said, I'm just working on waking up, and it was 7 o'clock Pacific time. And I'm thinking, I know you get up at like 4 a.m. And I said, so 7 a.m. trying to wake up, slacker.
I was up late last night writing, and I had gone out to eat earlier. So I was up much later than I normally am up. So yes, I got up at 6 a.m.
Oh, sleeping in. It's all right. I would sleep in, but I have a dog who gets me up whenever he decides he needs to go out. And this week it's been about 5:30. So, you know, I'm at his mercy.
Yeah. Good time. I never miss the sunrise. I see it every day, nice. And I love it.
Wow. Okay. So first things first, you were correct. I guess the recall effort didn't need your vote, though it made my heart skip a beat because there was a while there. It seemed really close. But you...
Nah, just at the very beginning when people were thinking about how much they hate Gavin Newsom, it was close. But, you know, once the reality settled in about what was going to happen if they got rid of him, it was never close again.
Right. Once they realized you get rid of Gavin Newsom, you get Larry Elder. That was it. It was over.
Right. Well, the thing is that when it seemed like it was close, there were better Democrats thinking of running. And the Democratic Party in California put an end to that really fast. So any Democrat who was thinking about running, you know, in other words, viable candidates, they were told if you run, you will never be a Democrat again and we'll never help you, whatever you do in the rest of your career. And they all just dropped out. I mean, some of them had gone far in becoming candidates, hiring staffers and paying them and starting to raise money and things like that. And they were told in no uncertain terms that, no, you are not running.
Wow. Wow. Well, you know what? There's something else happened, and it's the reason I had Alex Lawson on a few minutes ago from Social Security Works, because he's been on fire on Twitter about this. Alex is a good guy. And a few months ago, we talked about Kathleen Rice from New York, and you said, oh, she's not that bad.
Who said?
I think you said that she wasn't so, because
we talked about her going
into leadership.
I've hated this woman for 10, 15 years.
I'm confused. When she was put into, she was put on a committee at the, instead of.
The most important committee. House Energy and Commerce Committee,
instead
which
of AOC.
Basically handles everything.
Right.
Everything that has to do with spending money on domestic agendas goes through that committee. And AOC wanted that job.
That's right.
And only one person made sure that it was Kathleen Rice who got it.
Nancy Pelosi.
When Kathleen Rice voted against a lowering drug costs, the person who's responsible isn't just Kathleen Rice, it's also Nancy Pelosi.
That's right.
Giving her that job instead of AOC.
And put her on a leadership track as well. So what does Nancy Pelosi say now? Because Kathleen Rice stabbed her in the back, because I'm guessing Nancy Pelosi wants this package to go through.
I'm guessing as well, but just a guess.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know, David Sirota.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
I really do.
You know what? I use that word a lot, but the thing is, I use it incorrectly because all this stuff is totally believable. It's just fucked up, but it's believable. It's to be expected because, again, these three so-called Democrats who the media insists on calling moderates, they're not moderates. Stop using that word. We need to call them out. When they use the word moderate or centrist, say that's not who they are at all. I've been quoting you a lot. I had Katrina VandenHeuvel on the show Monday, and I talked a lot about the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. And she's like, oh, I like that one. So there you go.
Oh, God save us.
Well, she liked the characterization of those people as the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. But these three.
Sure, but, you know, she and her magazine should have been using that for the last decade.
Yeah, right. But these. So David Sirota at his dailyposter.com has a story today, Big Pharma's Democrats. And it points out it's about these three, Peters, Schrader, and Rice. Three House Democrats working to kill drug price legislation raked in roughly $1.6 million from pharma donors. And the top aide for one of them is now a pharma lobbyist. I thought this wasn't allowed to happen anymore.
No, just on paper.
Oh, God.
The reality is that it happens every day, and it's what makes the wheels turn in D.C. It's absolutely disgusting.
Amazing. So, are they going to be able to...
By the way, as long as we're talking about lobbyists, I'm sorry for interrupting, but I couldn't resist and I won't remember. I want you to guess who the biggest recipient of lobbyist money is. So just money that came directly from lobbyists to candidates and elected officials. So not the whole special interest paraphernalia, but just the lobbyists themselves. Who took the most money from lobbyists in the whole United States? Both Republicans and Democrats
in any chamber of government.
1990 till now.
In the Senate, the House, any chamber of government at all.
Both chambers, yes. Anybody. Number one scumbag.
Mitch McConnell.
He's very high up on the list, but no.
Ted Cruz.
No, he's not that high
really?
Up on the list.
Really? Wow. I don't know. I could keep guessing, but it's just going to be a waste of time because I'm just guessing. Who is it?
Well, I'll give you a hint. It's a Democrat.
Oh, it's a Democrat. Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
No, not even close.
Really?
It's not only is it a Democrat, but it's someone who I believe you voted for.
Someone I voted for. Who did I vote for? In Florida?
No. Well, you voted in Florida.
I did vote in Florida. Oh.
She wasn't running.
She. Okay, so it's a woman.
What? She. She wasn't running as to be a member of Congress from Florida. She was running for president.
Hillary Clinton.
Oh, you guessed it.
Oh, my God.
And it wasn't close. She was more than double anybody else. Number two was Mitt Romney, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. That's interesting. You know, follow the money. It'll always tell you a story. That might not be the story you're looking for, but it'll tell you a story. Wow.
Yep. I mean, and you know, that's why I don't vote for these people. Yes, they're the lesser of two evils on some things. Yes, she's, you know, thank God she's pro-choice. But, you know, when it comes to corruption, no one's going to touch her.
No, I hear you. And Howie, the whole thing about voting, the lesser of two evils, there's a distinction that I make. In the primary, I will never vote for anybody even close to evil. In the primary, I'm going to shoot for the stars. I'm going to go for the person I think would be the best in that office. But when it comes to the general election and we're given a choice between two people and it could be bad and really fucking evil, I'll go for the bad to vote against the really fucking evil. And in fact, in every presidential election I've ever voted in, except for Obama's first term where I bought the bullshit, I didn't vote for him in the primary. I voted for John Edwards. I voted for John Edwards in the primary. He was still in the race then here in Florida. But in the general, I voted for Obama and I thought, you know, I was brimming with joy and hope and change on the night he won. And it was my birthday, by the way. And we saw what happened there. But other than him, every time I voted in a presidential election, it was always against the other guy.
Yep. Well, what can I say? One day you will be as old as me and you'll stop doing that.
I guess. I don't know. But I still think that when it comes down to
a
choice between two, I will vote for the lesser of two evils because we're often given a choice between different degrees of evil. And I will vote for the least worst candidate available in a general election.
Okay.
That's just me.
Well, you're entitled to.
I know.
I don't do that. I used to.
I know.
I did that. I stopped. I voted for Obama.
Yep.
With happily.
Yeah.
And although I knew that I knew his record very well, both in the Illinois State Senate and in the U.S. Senate. I knew how bad his record was. So I knew what I was doing. But I did. It was my last lesser of two evils vote. I never did it again.
Right.
I didn't vote for him, and I'm not talking about the primaries. I didn't vote for him in the general. That doesn't mean that I voted for Romney or McCain.
Right.
I just refused to vote for evil.
I understand. I get it. And again, you're in California, and maybe if I was in California, I'd feel the same way in a presidential election because California.
Maybe if I was in Florida or Ohio, I would feel the same way as you. But I hope not.
Right, I hear you.
But how am I ever going to know?
You're not, and you're lucky that you're not. You won't find that out, Howie Klein. So I'm stuck here in Florida, where our idiot governor is. I mean, he's trying. I don't know. I don't understand the strategy here, because it sure seems to me that he's trying to kill off the people of Florida. Does he think we're
not
too populated?
The people of Florida, but I mean, yes, the people of Florida, but particularly his own base. That's the part that I love about this. I mean, when I read about these right-wing talk show hosts, these hate talk radio people dying, I don't want to say I'm happy, but I am happy. These are the people that are supporting this insanity of a Republican Party, and they're killing them. And, I can't weep too much.
No, and that's why we have to work extra hard during primary season to get the best candidates possible. I got to tell you, you introduced us to Lucas Kuntz a couple of months ago. He's been on the show a few times, especially since the pullout from Afghanistan, because he's a veteran who said it's going to be ugly. No matter when they decide to finally end this travesty, it's going to be ugly. There's no, especially when you're losing a war, when you leave, it's ugly. And he said,
you know what? It has been from the beginning of time. It has been from Roman times and Greek times.
Yeah.
When I say Greek times, I mean Alexander the Great times. That's what happens. You occupy a country and then you leave and it's ugly. It relatively
always.
Speaking, it was not ugly this time. I mean, we think it was because the media and the Republicans are going nuts on this.
Right.
But you compare, just do a little tiny, tiny bit of digging at what happened when the British occupied in Afghanistan and they left. I mean, on their way out, the Afs obliterated an entire British army. When I say obliterated them, I mean they killed every single one of them. They let one person live in the whole army so he would go back and say, this is what happened.
Wow. Yeah. See, and it sucks that 13 of our young people were killed. It sucks. But guess what? It's
but it
war.
It wasn't done by the Taliban.
No. Well, at the airport. I guess that was an ISIS attack. It wasn't the Taliban. Right.
I mean, people should be no one wants to do it, and no one will, but people should be congratulating Biden and Blinken.
I agree.
For negotiating with the Taliban and getting the Taliban to cooperate with the American withdrawal. This withdrawal should be getting accolades. It was done so well. It was done so flawlessly. It was done amazingly well. And instead, it's just being attacked so that the American people are tricked by these idiots in the media and, of course, the Republicans you would expect it from. But the media just bought right into it. Good story.
It is amazing. Something else that is getting me nuts is this, you know, Mark Milley, about a month ago, I said, as we're learning more and more about what happened on January 6th and Mark Milley's cool hand throughout the whole thing, I said a while back, I really believe he's the only reason we are here, that things are as they are today. Because if not for him, Trump's little coup attempt would have succeeded. I have no doubt. And now we know even more from this new Bob Woodward, Robert Costa book. Then I believe it even more. And these idiots on the right are saying, he needs to be fired. Court-martial him. Kill him. Get rid of him. He saved us from a madman who was trying to overthrow the government and retain control of the White House.
That's right. That is exactly right.
He deserves a medal.
Of course, you see that as saving us from a madman. The Republicans see it as kicking them out of power.
Yeah.
They don't think of – even the ones who know that Trump is a madman, they somehow seem to be able to talk as though he weren't. It's very, very strange. I mean, you know, even people who have said what he is out loud in front of crowds, like Ted Cruz, for example, or Lindsey Graham.
All of them have
described him and what he is. And yet now they're – you know, total Trumpists, total, complete Trumpists.
And I don't know how they're not called on it every time they open their mouth. Reporters, every time they see Marco Rubio, they should say, what about Donald Trump, the crazy idiot who, you know, whatever quote he said.
I mean, how many times did Marco Rubio say that Trump was unfit for office?
Unfit for office, exactly. And, you know, I just go back to January 6th and Lindsey Graham's drunken speech on the Senate floor saying, I'm done. I've had enough. I was there, but I can't go there anymore. What happened? Kevin McCarthy, who days later even said on the floor of the House, Donald Trump is directly responsible for this. And then he goes down to Mar-a-Lago to suck the mushroom dick. I just don't get it.
You've got the word orange. Did you read what Trump is quoted as saying in the book about Kevin McCarthy and that whole thing?
Oh, yeah. That he came and wanted to kiss my ass. And he badmouthed him. He's like, he thinks he's my friend. He pretended to be my friend. And I said, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. Because he's got the mental... aptitude of a three-year-old.
I know, it's so sad. So,
it really
and so pathetic.
Sad. But, you know, I brought up Lucas Kuntz, and you have a piece up at downwithtyranny.com. You wrote, it takes decency, courage, and determination for justice to triumph. Just ask Lucas Kuntz. And you pointed this out to me. You asked if I had read it. I did now.
It was such a joy writing that piece. You know, Lucas inspired me by sending me an email where he talked about that exactly, and he's discussing it. He's discussing it in a very high-minded way and very admirable way. I thought of it immediately in terms of one of my favorite movies, which I had just watched again. So the night before, I had just watched this film that I had seen before. It was a Quentin Tarantino movie.
Django Unchained, right?
Oscars and every kind of nomination and award that you can get in the filmmaking industry. And I suspect that many of your listeners have seen this already.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally great movie called
Django Unchained.
Exactly. Thank
yes.
you.
Yes. And I agree. I really like that movie.
And what the satisfaction of watching Django. You know, it's kind of a rewrite of history in a way. I mean, you know, that's what Tarantino does.
Does, right?
It's wishful thinking history rewritten for us to enjoy. And he took this very determined black slave and made him into the hero of the movie, not just a passive way, but the ultimate over the top way of he's like slaughtering. I don't know. I didn't keep count, but literally dozens of white supremacists.
Yeah.
And if you hate white supremacists, you will not be able to keep from enjoying and being thrilled by the way the character that's played by Jamie Foxx.
Oh, right.
Who is Django, the way he just mows them down, It's so amazing. Well, obviously, Lucas is not talking about mowing anybody down, but what he is talking about is taking these military-industrial complex lobbyists and throwing them in jail, making it illegal for them to do what they do, which is basically all they do is just bribe members of Congress, and he's saying they have to go to jail. Now, that's a little bit different from saying, well, they have to wait 12 months before they can start bribing again, which is what the law says now, or 24 months, whatever nonsense it is that they all get around anyway. He's saying, no, they have to go to jail. And the same satisfaction when I saw Jamie Foxx like shoot this plantation owner. Oh, actually, did he shoot the plantation owner? No, his partner shot the plantation owner. Then he then shot like 30 of the plantation's owner's workers, or collaborators,
right,
or slave overseers.
Right.
And the same way that how the joy that I got from that was the same kind of joy that I felt when I was reading what Lucas had to say about putting these lobbyists in prison. You know, I don't know if I wrote about it in this particular post, but every year or every 2 years, I'm not sure if it's one every year or every 2 years, Gallup does a poll about what jobs that people do, what occupations are the favorite and least favorite. And every year it's the most favorite are nurses.
Uh-huh.
And the least favored are lobbyists. Lobbyists are even less favored than used car salesmen, less favored than politicians. Not much, but they are less favored overall than any other job. So the American people know what they are. They know what lobbyists are. And why doesn't Congress do something about it? Because they're the ones that are getting paid off.
Yes.
Why doesn't Congress define bribery in a way that makes sense to people? Because they're the ones that are getting the bribery. They'll never do it. These members of Congress take bribes. That's what they do. They take bribes. And they protect themselves by passing legislation that excludes what they do in taking bribery as a form of bribery. They specifically write themselves out of the law. So that's why we have
amazing.
To elect people like Lucas Kuntz, who isn't going to do that, who is promising in his campaign that is what he's campaigning against, that he won't do that.
Right. So
obviously he's not the only one like that. In fact, we just endorsed another guy who's running for Congress. He's running for the seat held by Conor Lamb now. So Conor Lamb, one of the worst Democrats in Congress, is retiring from his seat so that he can run for the U.S. Senate.
Oh,
he's not
going
to win. Don't
Good.
Worry. He won't win the
Thank
U.S.
You.
Senate seat.
Right.
But, I mean, he won't win the Democratic nomination even. But the guy who's running against the right – he's not running against him. The guy who is taking over that seat, who's going to be the Democratic nominee because there is no other Democrat running at this point, that guy we just endorsed.
Oh, good.
And he basically had the same thing to say as Lucas, the same kind of attitude. It was so impressive. And by the way, his name is Chris DeLuzio. So that's DeLuzio.
Okay.
So he, you know, again, you know, a guy who graduated from Annapolis. He takes his service to the country for the country extremely seriously. And a lot of these people who come from the military are really bad people. I mean, the DCCC sold everybody this bill of goods. We're gonna elect all these great
veterans,
Democratic veterans,
right?
And they're women as well, and they're wonderful fighters. Well, every one of them turned out to be a sack of shit. They're all terrible. None of them are good. Not one of them. Every one of them turned out to be absolutely terrible. I hope they all lose, and I don't even care if Republicans replace them. I know you do, but I don't.
I do.
But there are also really good veterans like Lucas
Coons. That's right.
Like DeLuzio. They were in the military, but they're progressive. They're as progressive as we are. They're absolutely great.
Good. You know, in this post where you quote Lucas Coons, what he wrote, you quoted a tweet of his that said, "War profiteers and their allies in Congress wasted 20 years, $6.4 trillion, and thousands of lives on war. No more. It's time to criminalize war profiteering. And any politician or defense contractor found breaking this law should get jail time." And I love that. So this is also the post in which the question you asked me at the top about which candidate took the most money from lobbyists, and you said it was Hillary Clinton, Mitt Romney second, but the rest of the list is pretty fascinating. John McCain is third, Mitch McConnell fourth, so I was close, Chucky Schmucky fifth, John Kerry, Harry Reid, Patty Murray, Barack Obama,
and Boeing.
Boeing.
She literally represents Boeing
yes.
in Congress.
Gotcha.
And they give her all that money.
Got it. And then Barack Obama. And then Ed Markey. That's a disappointment.
Well, the thing with Ed Markey is not all lobbyists are corporate lobbyists. There are some lobbyists who are lobbying for, the Green New Deal, for
sure,
example.
Right.
Or lobbying to stay out of war instead of for war profiteers. Markey, I was sorry to, I had to include him because it was, his
the dollar
name was
amount,
there.
Right.
I'm not making this stuff up, but he's not a corporate, he doesn't take money from corporate lobbyists. He's taking money from public service lobbyists. So that's a different thing.
Got it. Okay, that's good. The next category you have are the members taking bribes from war profiteers. So let's see who tops this list. Kay Granger of Texas. Really?
Right. People who top this list are all on the committees that can do them the good that they need to do. So even people who you've never heard of, like Kay Granger, it was the chairman, and now she's the ranking member of the House Armed Services Committee or one of those war committees.
Right.
So that's why she gets all that money.
Yeah, it's interesting.
By the way, this list does only includes current members of the House,
okay.
right?
And Senate. You got
So current members of Congress.
Of Congress.
So in other words, people like Hillary Clinton who are
not
longer in
here.
Congress,
right.
or Barack Obama who's no longer in Congress, or Joe Biden who's no longer in Congress, they're not included. These are just current members of Congress.
Gotcha. And out of this list of 10, three are Democrats. And those three are Adam Smith of Washington, Steny
Hammond. The Military Industrial Complex
committee,
which
right.
they don't call it that, but
right.
they should.
Yeah. Steny Hoyer, of Maryland.
K Street, Steny Hoyer's job is to take money from the worst of the worst industries and lobbyists. That's what he does. He takes the money and then he gives it out to other members of the Democratic Party who are embarrassed to take money from
of
these
course.
People.
Right.
So in other words, it is embarrassing to take money from some of these folks. So what they do is
they give
the money to Steny and then Steny passes it along.
Unreal. And then Dutch Ruppersberger of Maryland.
Steny's number one ally.
Oh my goodness. And the rest, and the second to Kay Granger is Mitt Romney. There he is again.
Yeah. He's still in Congress. That's right.
He is. And then you have another list of the war profiteers' most favorite list right now, the ones who have taken the most money from the war profiteers this cycle alone. And
right, just this cycle.
Just this cycle. And Chuck Schumer's number two on that list. So, just in case people are wondering, Chuck Schumer's making the right noises now, saying that he's with Bernie and Joe, but he's still Chuck Schumer.
Yes, he's with Bernie. Yes.
Oh boy, Howard Klein. I'm sorry. What did you just say?
They went to the same high school.
Yes, they did. That they did. And with that, we reached the end of another hour. I got nothing more to say to that because I know they didn't learn that at that high school, because you went to that high school too, right?
I did. And, I think that you know, Bernie and I learned the same thing, and it's a little bit different from what Chuck Schumer seemed to learn.
I guess so. You must have had the better teachers. Howie Klein, always a pleasure.
All same teachers. Maybe not Bernie, because he was there before the rest of us were.
Gotcha. Howie Klein, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And while you're there, visit the Blue America PAC and help elect progressives in the primaries. Get them to be the candidates so we can vote for them in the generals. Thank you, Howie.
All right. Thank you. I'll see you next week.
Okay, sounds good. All right, and thank you, everybody. Tomorrow, we're going to go on a little trip with George Washington. Seriously, I'll explain tomorrow. We're gonna take a walk down, really, memory lane. Until then, I will leave you with the news. Thank you for listening, everyone. And I'll see you tomorrow. Take it away, Nicole.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I have great confidence in General Milley.
President Biden on Wednesday proclaiming his support for General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In a forthcoming book titled Peril, hitting shelves next week, Washington Post journalists Bob Woodward and Robert Costa say that Milley called his counterpart in China, General Li Zhongcheng, in October and again on January 8th because he was, quote, fearful Trump might spark war. Milley's spokesperson said the communications were part of Milley's normal duties to, quote, maintain strategic stability. Well, the former guy told the right-wing propaganda television channel Newsmax that Milley's actions, if true, amounted to, quote, treason. No, it's not treason. And thankfully, many other generals are coming out proclaiming their support for what Milley did as well. Additional reporting confirms that Milley did, indeed, consult with then-Secretary of Defense Esper before that October call, and that he spoke with Donald Trump's hand-picked replacement in January, though acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller denies it. To be continued, I'm sure. Emotional and devastating testimony on Wednesday before the Senate Judiciary Committee by four American Olympic gymnasts who were all abused by former physician Larry Nassar. Simone Biles, Michaela Maroney, Maggie Nichols, and Allie Reisman all accused the FBI of botching its investigation into numerous allegations against Nassar. They also cited intimidation by the sport's governing body, USA Olympics. Simone Biles was the first to speak.
To be clear, I blame Larry Nassar, and I also blame an entire system that enabled and perpetrated his abuse.
All four gymnasts pointed fingers directly at the FBI for mishandling their allegations.
USA Gymnastics, in concert with the FBI and the Olympic Committee, were working together to conceal that Larry Nassar was a predator. I then proceeded to tell them about London and how he'd signed me up last on his sheet so he could molest me for hours twice a day. I told them how he molested me right before I won my team gold medal. How he gave me presents, bought me caramel macchiatos and bread when I was hungry. I even sent them screenshots of Nassar's last text to me, which was, Michaela, I love how you see the world with rose-colored glasses. I hope you continue to do so. This was very clear cookie-cutter pedophilia and abuse. And this is important because I told the FBI all of this, and they chose to falsify my report and to not only minimize my abuse, but silence me yet again.
Michaela Maroney. This spotlight on the FBI's horrific handling of this case brings up some old problems, too. Most notably, the agency and Director Chris Wray's failure to investigate the over 4,500 tips that came in regarding then Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. So this is not over either, nor should it be. While the media seems intent on focusing on pitting one side against the other politically, the clock is ticking on the debt ceiling. This is an issue that we didn't have to deal with for the last 4 years because the Democrats worked with the former guy and the Republicans, and went along with his plan to suspend the debt ceiling until after the 2020 elections. The result is that Donald Trump oversaw the fastest increase in the national debt of any president in history. Remember, he campaigned on eliminating the national debt in 8 years. In reality, he added at least $8.3 trillion
increasing the debt by 38% in less than 4 years. And now Mitch McConnell is telling Chuck Schumer that it's up to the Democrats alone to raise the debt ceiling. The bottom line is that if Congress doesn't do it soon, the U.S. government will default by the end of next month and risk serious damage to both the economy and our international reputation. In other news, President Biden on Wednesday announced a new military pact with Britain and Australia called AUKUS, A-U-K-U-S. All right. To share advanced technologies such as artificial intelligence, cyber operations, submarine systems, and long-range strike capabilities. The agreement was widely interpreted as a bid to counter China's expanding influence in the region. U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan in Manhattan on Wednesday refused to delay a lawsuit accusing the former guy of defaming former Elle magazine columnist E. Jean Carroll after she claimed he raped her in the mid-1990s. Trump's lawyers had asked to put the case on hold while they appealed an earlier ruling by the same judge. This order could let Carroll's lawyers obtain documents from Trump. Well, that is unless he appeals this ruling as well to block it, which, of course, he will. Carroll's lawyers also want to obtain a DNA sample from the orange one. You may recall, Carroll sued Trump in 2019 after he denied her allegation that he raped her in a Bergdorf Goodman department store fitting room in Manhattan. The former guy said that Carroll wasn't his type and accused her of making up the story to sell her book. Oh, please. Well, I guess it's Elon Musk's turn again. SpaceX on Wednesday launched the first space mission with an all-civilian crew, something new in this private billionaire space race. They used a reusable Falcon 9 rocket and sent four people, a tech entrepreneur, a geoscientist, an aerospace data engineer, and a physician's assistant into orbit. Unlike the other two billionaire launches that spent mere moments outside of the Earth's atmosphere, these four will spend 3 days in space before splashing down in the Atlantic. The 38-year-old founder and CEO of a company called Shift 4 Payments, that's the tech entrepreneur, paid an unspecified amount for his seat on this mission. He also donated the other three seats and an additional $100 million to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So at least something good comes out of this. And finally, we've reached another awful milestone in this pandemic. Johns Hopkins University revealing that 1 in 500 Americans have now died due to COVID-19. The death toll, officially at least 664,000 people, is likely a lot higher than that. This due to a lack of testing early on and the fact that infection rates are still dramatically high, even with vaccines widely available. The World Health Organization says that global coronavirus cases have seen their first substantial decline in more than 2 months after the Delta variant sparked widespread havoc. But cases in the U.S. remain high, notably among children. The WHO has called for all countries to inoculate 70% of their populations by the middle of 2022 in order to get the pandemic under control. We got a long way to go to get there. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Please visit NicoleSandler.com, look around, and don't forget to click on that donate button.